We kick off hour number two of the program. This segment brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. They won't let you down. They're helping their members grow financially, moving upward and forward with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Online, it's tvacreditunion.com to look up all the services that they can help you with. Basically, anything a bank can do, they can do it and give you a better rate. Check them out, tvacreditunion.com, or walk into a branch near you. There's over 20 in East Tennessee ready to serve you. It's the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. I mentioned when these kids are born or were born. Travis Cabbage tweets, most kids being recruited now were born 2002 or later. That means they weren't even around for the 2001 run. And obviously, when they're born doesn't really matter. It's when did you start actually paying attention to football? That's years later. Sam provides a strong dose of reality. This place isn't as special anymore as we want to think it is. We have a big stadium and great facilities. Cool. Lots of schools have that now. Kids don't care that we were great 20 years ago when they weren't even alive to see it. Peyton is just a middle-aged guy on TV to them. It's true. Yes, the question, Houston, just start winning and the recruits will come, but how do you win enough when you don't have as good of players?
We talked yesterday after the transfers and updated class rankings. Tennessee had the 8th best class last year. Like, that's good enough. Like, you can win a lot of games if you can consistently get classes like that. And that's why I'm not panicked about the class, because it's not completed yet. It's not signing day. It's not early signing day. It's not done. It just is what it is. You're, again, like losing a receiver to Alabama, okay. Losing an offensive lineman to Kentucky, the team you beat the worst in the SEC last year, like that's the issue. And so, yeah, like it's a very easy blanket answer. Oh, just win some games. And the recruits will flock in. Okay, but how do you win enough if you're – like, we're all saying – we all agree. I mean, go read Twitter or Facebook or any message board, like, during a game, and what are people saying? Oh, this guy's just not good enough. Player X, not fast enough. This guy, not good enough at this. Offensive line, slow. Secondary, slow. Linebackers, not dynamic. Defensive line, blah. Okay, well, you got to improve those players. And that's what makes last year so, in a way, confusing, right? I mean, you went 5-7, and you did have two games where, whoa, I think the staff really proved they can coach, right? I mean, the Auburn game, the Kentucky game, you were underdogs in both of those, and you won. But we also saw the flip side of that coin, which is going to Vanderbilt and looking like you didn't have a clue. Not only did you not have a clue schematically, your team didn't look motivated. The Missouri game. Those were for bowl games, by the way. Like, those, both of those games, you win them and you're going bowling. And Missouri, if you want to say the injury to Garantano, maybe. But it's not like that defensive plan against Drew Locke and the boys was very, very good. I mean, and they were a really good team. They had just throttled Florida. So, we're still a more talented team than Vanderbilt, right? On paper. Are they just a more developed, under-talented team? Is that what this is going to take? Is it going to take Pruitt, you know, 2 to 3 years of developing and coaching, and then you get to the level where, okay, well, the teams that you do recruit better than, which you have recruited better than Missouri, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, and you're probably right there with South Carolina after the transfers and stuff for over the last, what, 4 or 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you got to do, though? You got to develop the roster? And then get to a place where you're beating the South Carolinas, Vanderbilts, Missouris of the world consistently, Kentucky. And then you couple that in with 3 out-of-conference guarantees, and then you just try to steal one, get to 8, and then all of a sudden people think, okay, this guy can coach, give him some talent. Because Travis Cabbage, it's another really good point. He said Pruitt's never been anywhere where he didn't have results to sell. He's always been at a place like Florida State or Georgia or Alabama, where the year before it was, yeah, we won 9 games, but I'm here for 10. I'm here to get us to 11. I'm here to get us to 12. I'm here to get us to the national championship. I'm here to get us to a national championship again. It's tough to come in when you, I mean, what did Pruitt have to sell when he got here? Hey, I was like their 20th choice for head coach, and they won 4 games last year. Come play for Tennessee. It's a very tough spot.
Well,
and I don't know if that's a game plan thing on the recruiting trail that Pruitt needs to adjust to, because I think that's a really good point by Travis. Like, everywhere Pruitt has been and gone, he hasn't gone into a situation and the team has just been terrible. Like, when he went to Georgia, they were pretty good. They just kind of needed something to get them over the hump. It's much easier to sell a kid on getting from 8 to 10 wins than it is from 4 to 6 or 7. I mean, that's not the most exciting, hey, come rep the T and get us to a bowl game. I mean, I guess you have to start somewhere, but, whew, man, that's a tough sell. And maybe it's not one he's completely comfortable with or familiar with, and maybe that's part of the issue.
Well, you're rebuilding, right? No one disagrees with that.
We've been doing it for 15 years.
The worst, you know, coming off the worst season school history when you fired Butch Jones. You waited till it bottomed out. And for a successful rebuild, your head coach either has to recruit better than the results on the table, or
he has to be like a recruiting wizard.
Or you have to be a coaching wizard. You have to take. You have to come off 5-7 seasons, land recruiting classes that are just okay with for that level, but then take those players and beat other teams that have better players from the rankings. You have to be. You have to do one or the other. If you can't do either one of those things, you will not be successful. You just won't. Like, one of those things has to. So, I haven't seen anything. I guess the jury is still out kind of on both of those, really. But you've seen some flashes of both, I think. Like, beating Auburn last year, you felt like, hey, we just beat a team with a lot better talent than we have. Mm-hmm. This is good coaching. And there's been some recruiting wins where you're like, man, we really, with our wins and losses, had no business getting this player. But the jury's still out on whether either one of those things can be done consistently under Jeremy Pruitt and this staff.
And maybe if you do both enough, you can still ultimately get there. But
I would agree with that, yeah.
But sure. It needs to be, I guess, consistently both?
Yeah. It seems like you got outcoached in a lot of games last year, too, where the talent was closer.
Yes.
It felt like in the South Carolina game, the talent was pretty even, and you even had a double. You had a 2-score lead in that game, right? And couldn't hold on and win
South Carolina?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you got a bad call there.
You got Vanderbilt, who there's no argument at all. You're more talented than Vanderbilt. Now, maybe they've been developed better over the Derek Mason run here, but you had a lot more talent on the field than Vanderbilt. The same
at
way
least you, according to the rankings.
The same way you beat Kentucky, you should have been able to beat Vanderbilt that way.
Or Missouri, yeah. More so Vanderbilt, I agree with you. It's weird because I don't see a lot of negatives as a whole. I also don't know that I see this, at least right now, and I'm not prognosticating here. I'm just saying I don't think it can happen fast. And this kind of way of doing it, I don't know what the ceiling is. You know, it's one thing if a guy comes in and just loads the roster with talent. He's just a recruiting ace and they can't coach a lick. With that type of coach, you let him do that for 2 or 3 years, and then you bump him, and then you bring in a guy like Pruitt. The problem was you had that, and then you let that guy bottom out your program and brought in Pruitt to probably the worst roster you've had in the last 5 years. Like, last year was not a good roster. It's just not. He did not inherit a good team. I do not blame him for what he inherits. But therein lies the issue. And again, it's May. He's right. Recruited well to this point. I thought the first year there were a little struggles. You expect that. Last year was really good. And I guess maybe I just expected it to keep on the incline.
Yeah.
And that's the issue, is that as of right now, and this is strictly a snapshot on May 21st, I'm not seeing the positive slope continue. It seems like Tennessee has stalled on the recruiting trail, and that's what's weird to me. Because, frankly, That's the only way this gets that much better and quickly. I think there are a lot of winnable games on the schedule next year, but as we saw last year, I don't think you're going to win all of them. So can he win enough to flip the minds of some of these recruits, or is it going to have to be a you're just going to have to become an ace recruiter? I mean, I think the staff is good, but it's weird to me that Will Friend and who was the other one on Rogers? Was it just Friend? Because I know it was
Winky. Yeah,
Winky was the primary.
And then you've got T. Martin and Niedermeyer missing out on the receiver to Alabama, which is tough, man. Like the fact that you got in the final two and lost to Alabama, I'm not that upset about that one. They are Alabama. They do have, you know, quarterbacks stacked up. They're going to catch a lot of balls. They're going to go to the NFL, so on and so forth. But, man, like, are they swinging too high? I mean, I want them to do that, but it seems like this has now happened 3 years in a row where you swing a little too high and then you end up kind of having to scramble at the end for guys who then are upset that you didn't come after them sooner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we kind of knocked Butch Jones because he would fill up the class with, you know, three stars, and we're hoping you get to process them, but at least he had a full class. Like, at least you were up there in the rankings for a little bit. And again, like, momentum begets momentum. If you have the number 10 class, even if it's kind of a hollow number, you can still say, hey, we have the number 10 class in the country. You have a spot. We'll just get rid of this guy for you. But it's tough right now because, as I've mentioned, you know, you got a quarterback in Harrison Bailey who is propping up your class to get it to 29. And at what point do some of the guys you have committed now who are holding you at the 29th position say, is this going to happen? What's going on here? And then if you wait too long, you start going after guys that would have committed a month ago, and now they're going to be, oh, no, you didn't want me then. I don't want to go now. I'm going to go to NC State. I'm going to go to Vanderbilt. I'm going to go to Kentucky. Justin Rogers is just a weird one. I can't make heads or tails of that.
Yeah, Jeff tweeted in and said, this has the feel of Kentucky being the only school telling the kid they will try him out on defense, which we mentioned earlier. So I don't know. Maybe that's a factor. Maybe, I mean, who knows? That's what's hard with recruiting is you never want to base anything off of one kid because
it's true.
Mean, everybody's different.
But, I mean, I think we can look at the individual battles and then still step back and say, each individual circumstance is different, but the end result so far has been pretty consistent.
Yeah.
And that's that you're finishing second or third against a variety of schools. It's not like you're losing all these battles to Alabama or Georgia, right?
Right.
You're losing the battle to Kentucky, to South Carolina. That's the issue, is those schools that you are supposed to be beating in head-to-head battles, you're not.
Well,
you're certainly not beating Georgia and Alabama consistently enough. I mean, you just aren't going to. I'm not saying that's their fault. It's just tough. And Clemson, it's weird.
I've got a question for you, kind of a global question for you on the flip side. We'll come back with that. Stick with us as we talk Tennessee football here on 3 and Out. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. I went to Tennessee's target list, started kind of working down through that. One of the rivals, like, national guys weighed in, Houston, saying he's not worried about Tennessee recruiting at all. We'll be top 15, easy. He didn't say easy. He just said top 15, maybe top 10, long way to go, yada, yada, yada.
Well, yeah. I mean, if that happens, obviously everybody's happy and things are fine.
But Tennessee fans don't like to be top 15 if you're 8th or 9th in the SEC. So,
well, that's a good point, too.
So that was the question I wanted to ask you. Like, What do we expect and what do we expect moving forward?
I think you start in the East. I think you have to break it all down. I think Tennessee needs to finish no lower than third in the East in recruiting. If you're behind six West teams, I really don't care. You're only going to play two of them a year, but you better be finishing ahead of Vanderbilt, Kentucky, South Carolina, and one of Missouri too, and then one of Florida or Georgia.
Last season, it went Georgia, Florida, Tennessee.
And since then, it's been updated. You finished second in the East, according to transfer updates and rankings and such. So you did. You did a really good job last year. With the transfers you added, and especially if Solomon and Gibbs get cleared, and even if they don't, you've got them, you know, a year down the road. A lot of freshmen don't come in. You expect them to play. So it's essentially a redshirt year for those guys if they don't get cleared. They're still on your roster. They're still eventually going to make you better, just not as fast as you probably would have liked. Typically, you take a transfer. It's like a JUCO. You think they're going to make an impact immediately, but if they have to wait until year two, that's not the end of the world. So last year was really good, and this year may end up good. And I'm not saying it won't. This isn't a the sky is falling day. This is a you just missed out on two guys yesterday that at one point you kind of led for. You've missed out on a couple this year that you've led for, and now – I don't want to say they're resetting the board, but you're having to shuffle some things around. You're having to you are dropping down your board at guard because Justin Rogers committed to Kentucky after you led for him. Now, that doesn't mean you're not still going to get a great player. It doesn't mean you didn't get good players at guard and tackle last year, because you certainly did. It just means that right now the board is shifting. They thought they led for who was the Rakeem Jarrett. Yeah. He named Tennessee as right up there, maybe a leader, co-leader, and then he commits to LSU. So there's another receiver. There's a couple more. And again, you're still not necessarily going to end up with bad players, but you're not getting the top guys on your board. I guess maybe it's a good thing that it's happening earlier and not later. You do have more time to sniff around. I mean, they went out and found Art Green. They offered him, and he committed, but now everyone knows about him, and he's going to take some visits to Georgia and Florida for sure. So it's just a bit hectic. And as of right now, and that's what we're talking about, specifically right now, you're 29th in the country. That's not very good. Yeah, and I get it. It's May, but there are teams that are 1, 2, and 3, and it's May.
Right.
You could say it's May, and you're absolutely right, and it's not final until December, and everything will change, but wouldn't you much rather be 1, 2, or 3 now than 29? And wouldn't you much rather be top 15 in December than top 25? Yeah, you would. So it's kind of a balance.
29th in the nation, 4th in the SEC East behind Georgia, Florida, South Carolina.
I was reading the Athletic put out a thing yesterday about South Carolina's new facilities, basically. Like, they've got the barbershop and the pool tables and all, like, so it all of that stuff is kind of evening out. You know, you're seeing that with it, you still have an advantage, I think, recruiting to here, but it's not what it used to be. Let's go back to the phone lines, 865-546-8200. Got T-Carp on the horn. What's up, T?
Hey, guys. Hope everybody's doing well. I apologize if you hear Baby Shark in the background. I got the kids with me. So,
I love that song.
Oh, man. It's oh, my gosh. Guys, we've got, as I text you, Nate, and I apologize. It's hard to get a hold of you guys without Twitter, but it's winning. You've really, really just got to win. But I don't expect the 10-win type of thing, Houston. I expect, hey, you've got to win 6 to 7 games this year, and you've got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And then you've got to win maybe a game that you're not supposed to win, or at least have a really good showing in it. Also, you've got to wrap your arms around Tennessee and not let those guys get out. Okay, you lost this Marietta, Georgia running back. You've got to get the guy over here at Maryville High School. You've got to get him. I don't care if you got to pay his dad in cash. Like, I'll be the bag man for that. I don't care. But you've got to get the guys that are 4 and 5 stars in your home state. And you've got to win with those guys. Now, I think Chaney's a great coach, and I think Pruitt's a great coach. Now, can you marry those two together and come up with a good game plan to win? I think you can. And I think Chaney's good enough to be a head coach in the SEC. I'm just being honest. I really, really like the guy.
I do too. I just don't think he wants to, which is fine by me.
But yeah, that's fine. Let him run this offense and let Pruitt be the quasi head coach, whatever he wants to be, you know. But I think if you start seeing, if you see that 6 to 7 game wins this season, we're on the right track, and the recruiting will come. It is disappointing because you are seeing the, you know, we're trying to swing for the fences, and we can't rebuild with those 4- and 5-star guys right now. We are just going to have to build with development. That's just what's going to have to happen. And you ask, why aren't those guys coming? Well, historically, you know, we haven't won and we haven't developed. How is this the second year in a row we haven't had anybody drafted? Is that correct?
I think it's 3 years in the past 5 years.
Yeah, something like that.
Three times in the past 5 years.
That's not okay. And also, you talked about the Vanderbilt game. You can't lay eggs like that, especially when it in the first season. So I think it's going to take a lot longer, but you've got to see marketed improvement in wins. You've got to see that two games. You got to get to 7-5 this year. I'm sorry. You know, I'm a big fan of having a decent quarterback. I don't think you have the game winner at Garitano, and I think the best thing to do is for him to for us to kind of pull a Clemson is for him to go the first half, and you need to move Schrautermauer into that starting position for and get them ready for 2020. And I know that sounds crazy, but if Clemson didn't do it with that kid over there, I mean, they wouldn't be where they're at. I'm just being honest. And you've just got to make ballsy moves like that, in my opinion. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong if you've got another option.
Well, that's
my worry is that none of those guys.
Trevor Lawrence
better.
Is a transcendent talent. Like, I don't know.
But even if we throw him out, I just don't know. I have no idea those guys behind Garantano are any better. T. Carp, and that's just something we won't know until some games start.
That is, but I honestly do think Garantano is the devil we know, and the devil we know is a 6-win quarterback at best. I'll see y'all. Thank y'all.
Thanks for the call, T-Carp.
Maybe we can get into the Garantano stuff, but Pro Football Focus has released some stats, and they actually are very, very favorable for Garantano. So we'll see. I feel like Garantano gets a little bit of unfair criticism considering what he's kind of been through since he's been at Tennessee. A lot of coaching change, a lot of turmoil. A lot of lies.
A lot of horrible offensive line play.
A lot of bad O-line play, poor quarterback coaching or no quarterback coaching. So let's see how he develops under Chaney. Let's see what happens. Jim Chaney has done this before. I mean, it took Tyler Bray a little bit longer, but at South Carolina as a true freshman, he just pulls Matt Sims and says, all right, Bray, it's your show. You're running it the rest of the way. And I think Tennessee won the rest of their games. They beat Memphis. They beat Ole Miss. They beat – did you beat Vandy and Kentucky that year? Maybe. So, like, Jim Chaney's going to play the best guy. I'm not worried about that. But I'm not ready to say it's not going to be Garantano either.
You know, T-Cart mentioned the state of Tennessee, pulled up the state rankings for 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's just not good again. You know, like we went round and round with it last year's class. You know, Reggie Grimes is the best player in the state, a 5-star weak side defensive end, 6'4", 240 pounds. I mean, he is essentially exactly what you need right now. Top 30 player in the country, 100% crystal ball to Alabama. 9 predictions. Doesn't really. I mean,
yeah. I mean, You gotta be getting guys like that.
Like, you look down the board, I mean, the number 3 player out of Memphis, 50% to Arkansas, 50% cloudy on his this is just a quick look. You do have you got some more undecided guys, then there's the 7th-ranked player in the state, Tyler Barron. He's a strong side defensive end, 6'5", 252. Again, position to need big time. He's a Knoxville Catholic. He's 100% crystal ball to Tennessee, so that's some good news. But you got, you know, the offensive guard, Bryn Tucker, already committed to Clemson.
But then you got, you know, Cooper Mays is 100% crystal ball to Tennessee, and he's listed as a better player.
No, he's worse. He's 14th. He's a 3-star.
I don't know what you're looking at.
247.
The composite or the 24/7 one? Because I'm looking at the 24/7 board, and it has Cooper Mays as the 8th best player. 4-star, and Bryn Tucker is the 10th and a 3.
What?
That's just the 24/7 number, not the composite. Maybe the composite's what you're looking at.
so weird. I feel like we're on the same screen. Very strange. I don't know. Yeah, one's got, I guess one's one way and one's the other. We'll come back. We'll, we still haven't got into the
curious case of Ebony Jackson.
Yeah, because that's a weird one. We'll come back with that next right here on Fan Run Radio. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville as we talk Tennessee recruiting. The Ebony Jackson story is a weird one. We mentioned yesterday that he had decommitted from Tennessee, and then, you know, and that he's from Marietta, Georgia. He had gotten an offer from Alabama, and that might be part of it. He's a 6'1", 205-pounder from Cale High School. Apparently, the high school was having their spring game, and some Tennessee coaches, I'm not sure which ones, he definitely didn't say it was Jeremy Pruitt, so I'm not sure who the coaches were that were there watching, but they came to watch the spring game. I mean, he was committed to Tennessee. That makes sense. On, like, the fifth play of the game, he breaks his arm in the spring game. So now he's out of the game. Broke his forearm. Tennessee coaches get up and leave the game. Ebony Jackson.
Bad move? To get up and leave right then? If that's the way it went down? Were they going to leave no matter what? Was this just a quick stop in, watch him a couple plays and dip? Or were they going to stay for the whole game had he not been injured?
I mean, I would assume they'd stay for as long as he was playing in the game.
Anyway, continue. Sorry.
He was quoted by Chad Simmons of Rivals yesterday in a post that's now been deleted.
Okay.
Ebony Jackson said, I decommitted from Tennessee because they didn't check on me. He says they didn't care about me as a human. They obviously like me as a football player, but I felt like by leaving and not checking on me after I got hurt, you know, that hurt my feelings, basically. I mean, he didn't say it that way, but Rivals ran the story. People freak out. Tennessee coaching staff calls some local Rivals people, says, hey, we did check on the guy. We did check on the kid. We called his family to see how he was doing. We couldn't walk down there and say, hey, hope you're okay. We got to run. We're going to run since you're done. Best of luck getting better. Sorry you got hurt, because that would be a bump violation. Like, we could not go talk to the kid in person that day because that
would
be a
recruiting
violation.
Which is kind of a weird rule, frankly. In that situation, you think it would be permissible to go ask if the kid was okay. Maybe get a liaison or something. Message boy. Hey, the coaches are up there. They just wanted to make sure you're okay. They can't talk to you. It's a rules violation.
So now
you're good? Okay, cool. I'm going to go tell them.
So now Ebony is upset that that Chad Simmons, that his post got deleted, got taken down.
Ebony Jackson's upset that the post got taken down?
Yeah. Hmm. Because he's trying to say why he decommitted from Tennessee, mm-hmm. trying to put that out there. Mm-hmm. Some fans are saying he was just looking for a reason to decommit from Tennessee because now Alabama's in the mix and he wants to be open. So that, you know, he can get his spot locked down maybe there or somewhere else or whatever. So it's a very curious situation.
I mean, I don't really know
what
to make of it. It's just kind of like, here's all the info. I don't know yeah. really what to do with that.
A lot of people are mad at Chad Simmons for not pointing out in his post that
it's a violation.
I didn't get to read his post. From the information I got, it was pretty straightforward. It was, here's what Ebony Jackson said. Ebony Jackson's decommitting from Tennessee. Here's what he said. Here's why.
Right.
And he just kind of posted his quotes. So I don't know how you really get mad at a journalist for posting direct quotes from a kid that's not even debatable. Like, he didn't misquote him. He just said, here's what the kid said.
People are saying it, and maybe he didn't realize that there was a contact
right.
rule in place at the time. But I guess people are wanting him to do a little bit more research than...
And at least put a disclaimer in there saying, I know it seems like Ebony wanted the coaches to stop by and check on him in person, and obviously this will be a bump violation. This may explain why they didn't. we'll update you as we get more information. It's something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, like Tennessee fans are at least a little perturbed that there wasn't a little more context around
yeah.
the quotes,
yeah.
which makes sense. But yeah, there's not much of a takeaway here except...
Well, it still is weird, though, that there was no... I mean, based on what Ebony Jackson is saying, it's weird that the coaches would have no contact with him. I get that you can't run down there and, like, put your arm around him, but, like, there are no text, phone call, DM, private message rules right now. And he's saying there was no checkup?
Well,
I mean, I get that they're saying they called his family, but surely they have his cell phone number, right?
That I mean, that's where it gets muddy. And, you know,
so that's the question.
Tennessee fans and media have been lied to by the previous staff about these sorts of things. Like, we know that for a fact. So it gets really muddy in a hurry. Austin Price of the Tennessee rival site, VolQuest, said Tennessee did reach out to Ebony, his family, and his coach after his injury. But that's what Tennessee said. Like, and forgive me for being jaded, but Tennessee under Butch Jones said a lot of stuff that was just patently false. So Tennessee is now saying, no, we called the kid, we called his family, and we called the coach.
It's hard to tell what is maybe the truth and maybe damage control.
Right.
I guess ultimately it doesn't matter. He's decommitted. I don't think that necessarily means you have no shot with him, although the way he's talking about the situation doesn't make you think you've got a good shot at him. It's also, you know, interesting timing that he gets the Alabama offer and now I'm mad about what happened in the spring game.
Yeah, I don't know what all that...
That's what I'm saying. Like. I don't know what the actual reasoning is here. We're just kind of given the information, but I don't know when his spring game was. Obviously, it had to be fairly recent. It is, I think, technically still spring.
Troy B. thinks we dodged a bullet. Kid's a whiny snowflake.
Perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do think that it's a different world these days when talking about high school athletes. Like, I do agree with that. They do want to be a little bit more pampered, loved. And I don't mean, like, I guess they want to be fluffed a little bit, right? Like, mm-hmm. They want to feel like the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that. And maybe Troy's right. Or maybe Tennessee, I don't know, maybe they messed up. Maybe they didn't contact him after the injury, and that does seem like, hey, do you really care about... I mean, it was a broken arm, though. It's not... It wasn't any... You know? You would think a broken arm for a running back... I mean, it's not a great injury, but it's not that big of a deal, really. You would think you would check up on somebody. I don't think they got up and left because he broke his arm thinking, well, he can't come to Tennessee now. I mean, no way. So it's just odd. And it doesn't seem like Tennessee would drop the ball that bad.
No. Surely not, right?
Given the circumstances, and obviously they thought this guy was talented enough to go watch his spring game, and with all the offers, and they were one of the first, it seems like they like him.
Is there a chance they like him okay, but they don't love him? They were in the area anyway, so stop by the spring game to make sure that they continue to keep him as a
nice... Yeah, I guess maybe
nice
there's a chance, but when
B
Alabama's then, offering, man, like I don't think... I would hope that Tennessee isn't saying
slow
no.
playing a commit that Alabama's in on.
Yeah. Right.
I feel like if I'm Ebony, I'm excited that they left as soon as I broke my arm. I'm the only player there that they want to see.
That's one way to look at it.
I feel special.
They don't care about these other scrubs. They were here for me.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm sure he was just – I mean, there's probably a lot of disappointment in that day in general, right?
Right.
You break your arm, fifth play into the spring game. Like, you're just, in general, very upset, very disappointed. So I feel like, yeah, you're probably looking for more reasons to kind of be upset. It's not going to take a lot to continue upsetting you on a day like that. And maybe Tennessee, like, were there any other schools there that did check on him? Like, or was Tennessee the only school there to watch you and you're mad at them because they didn't watch you enough after you got hurt? Like, it's just a weird... It's a weird situation. But so that's why he decommitted, I guess. Okay.
I know.
I don't feel like we know the entire truth of the story. And I don't know that we ever will.
That's why it's the curious case.
Yeah, the curious case of Ebony Jackson. It's very... Because there are two sides to this story. Both could be true in their own right. But emotion is not truth. Like, what you feel is true, but that doesn't mean that you are justified in feeling it.
Deep.
I'm just saying. What you feel is what you feel. And that's not necessarily your fault, but that doesn't mean you are right.
Well, Annie said it was well thought out. I feel like when I think of stuff well thought out, I take weeks, maybe months to decide.
Well, he got that Alabama offer and thought, well, I'm out. It was well, here's my thought, I'm out.
We'll see. We'll see if he gets that four-star bump now that Alabama's involved.
Oh, it's coming.
Maybe five. Final segment, hour number two of Three and Out, right back at you here on Fox Sports Knoxville. Final segment, hour number two. It's Three and Out right here on Fan Run Radio. So, I mean, the running back position, obviously, it's always, I don't know, it's one of the more, it's not as important as quarterback, but it also feels, it seems like one of the marquee recruiting positions. You always seem to remember the running back recruits you got or the ones you didn't and kind of how they pan out. A guy that goes to another school and is good, their name's always out there. You hear them. It's not like a receiver. Like, a really good receiver might make four really good catches in a game and two other so-so ones and end up with a pretty good day, but they don't dominate like the story of the football game. A running back, if he has a good game, has gotten mentioned, you know, 15 to 20 times as they carry or catch the football. So anyway, it's kind of strange how running back recruits always seem to stand out. You do have Jim Chaney coaching on offense now, a guy who has coached offenses that have thrown the ball a lot, a guy that coached offense at Georgia where they ran the ball with multiple running backs and kind of had the stable approach where we've got multiple guys and we'll keep you fresh and we'll put you in the league and all that kind of stuff. So I'm interested to see if they get better traction now with some of these running back recruits. Ebony Jackson obviously is a running back. So there's that. Tank Bigsby showed up at Blackman High School for Sunday's the opening regional wearing a pair of orange and gray Tennessee gloves.
Okay.
That's the opening to a Ryan Callahan post on GoVols 247. I mean, Tank Bigsby, definitely the all-name team.
It's a great name.
I think part of the problem is that the headline was elite running back sees Tennessee, quote, building after visiting Vols. Now, Bigsby was one of the guys that came in for the orange and white game. He had some quotes here that make it sound like he kind of likes Tennessee. He said they believe in playing freshmen, which kind of lets you think, well, you know, he's noticing that there's an opportunity, there are opportunities at Tennessee early. But then he also kind of hemmed and hawed around, yeah, probably a visit to Tennessee again. But it's too early, though. I might not take an official visit to Tennessee. But when you see these headlines as a fan, you kind of think, oh, we're in it with Tank Bigsby. Then you do a little more digging. It's like, yeah, there's 30 schools that are in it. He might not even take an official visit. Like, you might not even make the top five. I haven't really made my list, he said. Like, I think the problem is some of these, like, that recruiting sites, I mean, they have to cover somebody, right? They have to write an article about some players. So even guys that you want to write articles about the top players in the country, and if they are willing to talk about your school at all, then that creates a soundbite or a written post you can write up. But sometimes it makes the most optimistic of recruiting fans feel misled at some point down the line if things don't pan out very well with certain guys.
Well, it just, I guess, raises expectations. It's like, oh, look at all these great quotes by all these great players.
Mm-hmm.
They must love us. We're going to be turning them away. But it's not really where you're at right now. I mean, I get it. You're if you're covering Tennessee, you want to write things that make Tennessee fans happy, and nothing makes Tennessee fans happier than the people telling us how great it was. But yeah, it's kind of, I don't, again, context kind of matters. And at least in this one, you're getting it. Like, oh yeah, I'm not saying they're in my top five. I'm just saying I like them. It was fun. I might not visit. But I mean, people take him showing up with Tennessee gloves to the, I mean, that's like a really big deal. And in some people's mind,
right,
when it could be they were just in the car when he got there and he forgot his other gloves and just grabbed them. People always look at that and think, oh, he's coming to Tennessee. He's already wearing the gloves. That's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, he's crystal balled like 70-something percent to South Carolina. LSU hosts him last month on his first official visit, and he's planning to return to South Carolina, a school he's already visited multiple times, for an official visit next weekend. So, like, he's taking official visits to other SEC schools and not sure if Tennessee's going to make the list, but that's a headline. And I understand that this you know, the opening is in Nashville, so it's, you know, it's kind of a big deal. It's close to home, but he's apparently going to graduate in December and wants to commit before the season, not after. So there you go. One of your top running backs on Tennessee's board, but
well,
I don't know. If you want to read the whole thing, check out GoVols 24/7.
Optimism Tuesday.
Yeah. Like, I mean, what are you supposed to do with that as a fan? Like, I just don't.
With that specifically? Nothing. A good player has visited and might not come here. It happens all the time. Like, that don't matter to me.
I want positivity.
I mean, that's the problem, though. Like, that's the, does Pruitt have a problem swinging for the fences?
Well, I asked that earlier. I mean, I want him to do that, but I guess you just need to be, you need to be careful. Because if you swing the bat really, really hard at five guys, the top five guys out of 15 on your board, and you miss on all five, a lot of times, instead of falling to 6 through 10, you fall even further than that, because 6 through 10 are now angry that you didn't spend enough time with them. And so now, instead of getting a top 10 guy on your board, which you could have locked up, you're down in the 13, 14, 15 range or below, because it's resource allocation, right? It's time. There's only so much time that these coaches can and will spend recruiting. If you waste 70% of available running back recruiting time on guys you don't get, that's only 30% that you have on guys that you could ultimately get. And if you're not spending that 30% on the guys you're most likely to get, you're going to fall way, 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 way down your board. So that's where it comes into play. And the question is, do you continue to do this and each year it gets a little bit better, you fall lower down your board when you miss on the top guys? Do you eventually go out and get some of the top guys at any given position? I'm just using running back as an example. That's the question. See, at Alabama, at Florida State, at Georgia, he could spend all of his time on the top five guys on his board because he was going to get one of the top five guys on his board because he was at Alabama, Florida State, and Georgia. Right now, it appears in a lot of scenarios and certain positions, that's not necessarily the case. And my fear is that you fall too far down the board to really get an impact player when you could have, if you'd have started a little lower than you thought. I love the high expectations. I love going after the best possible players in the country. But if a guy's down to Bama, Clemson, and Tennessee, it just doesn't feel like we're in a position to win many of those. Mm-hmm. So maybe instead of doubling down on that guy, go after the guy who's down to South Carolina, Kentucky, and Tennessee and really lay it on him, because you could probably win that battle if you spent more time in it on the front end. That's what I mean.
Well, there's anecdotal evidence that exactly happened. I mean, there was a Joseph Anderson kid, in-state, defensive end,
exactly.
Mid-state, four-star. I mean, this isn't like some three-star, you know, bum, and you slow played him because you thought maybe some other five-star guys might come, and then in the final weekend before early signing, you're trying to go meet with both his parents at their different workplaces, and while they met with you and they listened and everything, it was just too little too late.
Yeah. Whereas if you had done that 2 months prior, he's coming to Tennessee.
Well, he was ready to commit.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's resource allocation. It's time. And it's the old saying, right? Like, one in the hand, two in the bush. Sometimes going ahead and getting guy. Yeah, he's not number one on our board, but would you rather have him or not at the end of the cycle if you don't get anyone ahead of him? I think you're probably going to go ahead and want to take that guy.
Kickoff hour 3 coming right back at you next.